So we left off last time being prepared to discuss the question of what we call Irimi Kli Rishon. And the Gemara had said on Ayin Balad Amud Beis, seven lines from the bottom, Darash Rava Nava Artecho. Nava, again, being the Aramaic word for a gas, for a wine press, or whatever holds the wine. And Rava said that dump boiling water into it, and that's how you kasher it. So Tosus writes here, Darash Rava Nava Artechu, the third Tosus, the big Tosus on the page, Peirush Hagilu Hagitios Hagidolim. That's how you should do Hagala on the, basically, pour the hot water in. Mikan Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the Irui Kikli Rishon, that if you pour boiling hot water from a Kli Rishon, and the way we define a Kli Rishon in Halacha is both if you have a pot that's on the fire, and there's hot water in it, once it reaches Yad Soledis, whatever exactly the temperature is, 110, 120 degrees, so the material in the pot, the pot's considered a Kli Rishon, and even when you remove the pot from the fire, even though it may not be Ma'ale Retichos anymore, and that's not bubbling up, as long as it's Yad Soledis, it's still considered a Kli Rishon. That, I think, is not really in dispute. So Rabbeinu Tam was claiming that if what Rava was saying was to do Hagala, he doesn't use that word, Artechu just means boil the water up, or pour the boiling water, if Rava was saying that you pour the boiling water and that constitutes Hagala, so Rabbeinu Tam claims that Iruri is Kikli Rishon. And if that's the case, that has implications both Lekula and Lechumra. It's a leniency, it's a Kula in the context of if you have Kalim. I literally just got the Shaila. The Shaila wasn't it wasn't this Shaila, but someone asked me about they had some, I guess, pans under the stove. I don't know if it was a par. I don't know if it was milchik pans, and some meat thing kind of spilled over, and somehow it spilled down and wound up getting onto the milchik pans that were underneath. And the question is, what do you do in that case? How do you kasher the milk pans? And the problem was, in his case, is that at least one of them couldn't fit into anything else. So what do you do in this case? So that case happens to be the easy case, because the rule we use with a kashering kalim, generally speaking, is kibolo kach polto. And we'll see that, I think, on the next daf. That however it absorbs is the same way that you can extract. Certainly when you're dealing with things that generally require hagala, with liquids. With solids, when you have to do libun, that's a more complicated question. That's a machlokas haposkim, was a machlokas the Rav and Rav Moshe, whether the same rule applies by libun. That's something that sort of bakes on dry, whether or not if you use the same temperature to burn it off as it was used to burn it in, whether that's sufficient or not. But certainly for Hagala, that's the rule, kibolo kach polto, things that absorb through a liquid medium. So however hot the liquid is that causes it to be absorbed is the same temperature that would be required for Hagala. So his particular case happened to be that the pot absorbed only through Iri at worst. In other words, the meat stuff spilled down, so it wasn't actually, the dairy pot wasn't in the Kli Rishon, it just had something splatter or spill from the Kli Rishon. But suppose that you had a Kli that wasn't maybe so easy to kasher, but it was used as a Kli Rishon on the fire and with liquid. And so, according to Rabbeinu Tam, the way you could kasher it, if you couldn't fit it into anything else, would be just to pour boiling water from a Kli Rishon. Because Irui mi Kli Rishon, Rabbeinu Tam says, is Kli Rishon. So that on that perspective, what's that? That would be a Kula. On the other hand, if you were to talk about a concern of things absorbing, if you say that Irui mi Kli Rishon is Kli Rishon, so then the same level of absorption, which is a Kli Rishon we assume theoretically absorbs throughout the entire pot, is also relevant in that case. So things that absorb through Irui, you have to assume that the pot was, you know, if we don't know how much is absorbed in the pot, that the entire pot is absorbed. Whereas, if you assume that Irui mi Kli Rishon were only to be treated as a Kli Sheni, so certainly we paskin to the Eved, the Kli Sheni is not the Bolea, it's not Bolea in ordinary circumstances. So therefore, it would be a leniency. So Rabbeinu Tam again says, Mikan Amar Rabbeinu Tam, the Irui ki Kli Rishon, mi da Amar Hocha, da Ayyidei Irui maflit hayayin habalua begas. The Al Karchach. Now, so through Irui, you extract that wine that had been absorbed in the gas. The Al-Karcha, Chayidei Irui Kamar, it has to be Irui, Sharei HaGas Gedolo Kveda, the gas is so big and heavy, She'en yecholim lesita letochi orem merutachas kedei lagila. You can't fit it into anything else. Ela al karchach al yedei irui ka'amar. It must be through irui. V'hashta kevan dahave kikli rishon. Since irui mikli rishon is kikli rishon, imkein hani kelim shenesru al yedei kli rishon sagi lhu b'hagala al yedei irui. So that's what Rabbeinu Tam says, that he presents the kula here, that you can kasher kelim through irui, even though they were actually used on the fire. Yeah, Sam?
If the gas originally didn't absorb the wine, it was cold wine, it wasn't hot wine, why do you need...
So the assumption is that the gas does absorb some wine, perhaps because the wine sits in it for a long period of time. But the question is, how much wine do we assume that the gas absorbs? So that's the Rashbam and Tosos are going to object. Hold on one second. Avo Rashbam cholek al Rabbeinu Tam v'omer the iri k'klishenihu legamrei. He says, no, Ivory is completely like a klisheni. And I should remember to mention here, they may allude to this later, right, if they don't explicitly quote it. One other area where it has a major issue, major nafkamina lahalacha, is on Shabbos. If you want to, let's assume that you hold you can make tea in a klisheni. Whatever it is, let's say regular things, not what some poskim call kalei habishul, but regular, ordinary things that are not cooked, but it's not something that cooks easily. If you pour, the question is, can you pour hot water directly on it? You know, let's say you have one of these soups, which is not an instant soup, or some of the soups apparently are not instant. You need hot water in order to prepare them, and it's some type of a cooking process. So I'm going to assume for the moment, perhaps those are not considered kalei habishul. So the question would be then, if you put, can you put it under the urn and pour the water directly into it, or do you have to take the water in a cup from there out of the urn, which is now a cliche, and then pour it onto this particular thing, Marshall?
Question actually came up yesterday. Someone said that for instant coffee, they do irui klisheni, so there's some separate issue with coloring the water because of the coloring in the instant coffee. And I said, based on what we've been talking about, I don't think there's such a thing as irui klisheni. It makes no sense.
Let's put it this way. There could be the same issue would probably hold. I have no idea what this is about. I've never heard of such a thing. Logically, if you assume the way some achronim do, that you can't make tea in a klisheni, but you can make it in a klishlishi, so the same issue will arise here. What is irimi klisheni? But I don't understand when it comes to tzoveya. So bishul is dependent on klisheni. Firstly, I thought there was no tzviya ba'ochlim, number one. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure. And number two, I don't know why it would be any different between klishlishi and klisheni. Right. If you don't permit the usage, let's say we don't permit the usage of makeup on Shabbos because it's coloring, so it doesn't matter whether the coloring agent is hot or cold. I don't know. Or whether your skin is hot or cold. I don't know what's the difference. So, whatever.
I suggested you look at
this stuff. Okay. Rashbam spoke about living in an era. Rashbam in Parshas Vayeshev, he says, commenting on what Rashi wrote, Ela Todos Yaakov, he says that he argued many times in the presence of and against his grandfather Rashi about certain things, and his grandfather was Moda that in light of the Pshatos HaMischad Shem Choyom, he would need to go back and revise his commentary. So if they lived in an era of Pshatos HaMischad Shem Choyom, and we live in an era of Chumar HaMischad Shem Choyom, I don't know. I see. Okay, there we go. I don't know. It's surprising to me, but I would at least take a look and see if this bit. I don't know. Okay. So anyway, so Rashbam says that Iri is ki klisheni hu legamri, completely. So as you said, Sam, Shani Yain Nesach, Shani Nesach, the Tashmisho Ayyadei Tzonin. Exactly that taina. Even though normally cold things, we don't assume that the vessels absorb. But here, again, it absorbs because it sits in there a long time. And normally we say that Kavosh is Kemavushal. And interestingly enough, by regular situations of Kavosh, let's say you let a treif liquid sit inside a kli, we normally assume that since it's kofush, pickle is kimavushal, bishul absorbs throughout the entirety of the kli. So Rashbam assumes here that maybe not, that it's enough, that in other words, I don't know, it might be absorbed throughout the entirety of the kli, but irui is enough to get something that was only absorbed through cold as opposed to something that was absorbed through heat. Okay, it's a little hard to understand, but that's, you know, if you said that it absorbed less, into the clay, you know, that it, because it was cold, fine. Then I would understand that the Iroi, as we'll see in a moment, the Iroi might be more effective at getting out things that are closer to the surface. We'll see a further discussion in a second. V'ikor divrei Rashi. So what Rashbam...
I'm not asking a question, I just understand the word. So how do we advance the conversation by talking about the Rashbam?
The Rashbam disagrees with Rabbeinu Tam. Rashbam says that ordinarily speaking, if you have a kli rishon, if you have a something that absorbed through a kli rishon, you cannot kasher it with irimi kli rishon. You have to boil water in it. Okay? That's what the Rashbam says. He disagrees with Rabbeinu Tam. V'ikar divrei Rashbam v'Rabbeinu Tam. The primary machlokus is b'mesecha Shabbos perikira, where the Mishnah says, ha'ilfas v'akedera shehavira mirutachim. If you take a pot or a pan off the stove, and you have hot food that was just cooking, are you allowed to add spices? Are you allowed to add salt? That's the discussion in the Gemara there, whether kli rishon, kli sheni is mevasho. So that's where the machlokas emerges between Rashbam and Tam. It's not in the Gemara. B'sham he'erichon, they go on at some length there. Umaskana de milsa, so okay, so now we have Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam. We have a war between brothers. So what's the conclusion? Umaskana de milsa, perish Rabbeinu Baruch. This Rabbeinu Baruch presumably is one of the major Balei Hatosas. He was the author of the Sefer HaTruma. Rabbeinu Baruch says that the milsa, the Iroi, taloi beplugta de Rav Ushmuel, the perakeitzat zolim bepsachim. So he claims that really this should depend upon a different, very important machlokas, a Yeridea machlokas, between Rav and Shmuel, which the pligi itata gavar i'ila gavar. The machlokas Rav and Shmuel, I call this the second law of rabbinic thermodynamics, is if you have a hot thing poured onto a cold thing, or a cold thing poured onto a hot thing, which one dictates the temperature and of the flavor exchange? Do we say ila gavar, that the one on top is the one that dictates the temperature, and if the thing on top is hot, it's going to absorb, it's going to be mavlia into the entire thing on the bottom? Or do we, and if it's cold, even though the bottom one is hot, we'll say that it's simply it's going to cool it down, and it's not going to, let's say it's treif, it's not going to absorb, be absorbed into the thing on the bottom? Or do we say tata agavar, that the thing on the bottom is what determines the mixture, and if the thing on the bottom is hot, then there will be a flavor exchange, and if not, if it's only the thing on top that's hot, there won't be a flavor exchange. So the Gemara has a machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Shmuel, we paskin like Shmuel, that tata agavar. I like to say, yeah, it makes sense, heat rises. That's really not sufficient in this case. But that's what the Gemara says. I can't explain this to you. I don't know how it coheres with modern thermodynamics. I'm not sure that it does, but that's what the Gemara says, and that's how they paskin.
Does anyone say that it doesn't make a difference?
Not in the Gemara. Now the Gemara assumes it's binary. It's either ila gavar or tata gavar. Yes.
By the size.
I can't. You know, I don't think your question is an excellent question. That's what you would think. There would be so many other factors, but so I don't know. It might be presumably if you have this huge thing that's hot on the bottom or cold on the bottom and one small thing on top. The truth is, I'll be doing teaching Simon Kofei and Yoredea, which is where this is, probably in the next couple of weeks. So when I go do Chazara on that particular topic, I will hopefully be able to come back. Because
also the bottom has the surrounding clay, its own container. Also has, is that the same temperature probably as the bottom also?
Don't get me started. I'm totally confused about this. Even when I taught it, this is like this total lack of clarity of what's going on.
What's the case in Sasha?
What is the case that it comes from? Let's see. I think it's the case of the Karban Pesach, whose rotev splattered on something. I think that's the Mishnah in which it's on. So we're going to put that aside. If you would like to come back to this in 2 weeks, I'll be happy to revisit and provide a little more information.
Of an extrapolation. It's not directly a
I mean, it is an issue. The issue of the rotev, if the Karban Pesach's Rotev splatters on something and then splatters back and it got warmed by something else, so how much does it get absorbed? Because if it got warmed by something else, it's not Sliesh anymore. So the part that the Rotev that dripped off splattered back onto the Pesach, you can't eat that part of the Pesach. How much can't you eat?
But it's a different din at Sliesh that we're talking about there as opposed to...
Well, yes and no. In other words, the nature of the Isser is different. It's right. It's a part of a carbon, but right. Once you... It's Isser of a Heter effectively.
Physics is
and right. So it should apply the same thing with Chazer and Basar.
There should be different subtleties that...
Okay. But in Shulchan Aruch, it's treated as the paradigm, you know, in Shulchan Aruch. They don't distinguish. So, for our purposes, that Rabbeinu Baruch suggested that this question, one second, this question of whether Irim Ikli Rishon, so here's what you have is, you have something being poured hot from on top, the thing on the bottom is cold, the question is, which will dictate whether there will be a flavor exchange, the thing on the bottom or the thing on the top? Now, of course, if you accept this, that we paskin like Shmuel, then the answer to Gavar, which means Irim Ikli Rishon, is not Kikli Rishon. Yeah, the question.
Okay, I want to suggest maybe a different line of thinking.
Okay.
They are not stupid.
I think we can all agree. Their powers of observation, as even sometimes ours, weren't always as much as we'd like, but...
This is very obvious. You don't have okay. to be the 21st century to understand it, and they probably knew. As I said, Akatan Shebaim Mechayim Amitim.
Okay.
So, I want to go to the next stage that Ari HaKadosh Zal said, give me 2 years and 3 months, or 1 year and 3 months, something in that nature, and I'll apparish the whole Talmud on Derech HaSod, or Derech HaKabbalah, Mashav HaSignon. So what I'm trying to suggest is to look deeper, probably the Mashke, Ila, or Tita, maybe it's something else, maybe the Kavanah is different, and I just, for one more, when I used to Bashana Shal Yortzeit Shel Abba Sheli, I used to read every day the Mikvaot. Mm-hmm. Is it Mikvaot? And there is a Mishnah on Mikvaot that a person read for Ilu Nishmat Haniftar. And at one time I found a Sidur that put the whole this Mishnah of Mikvaot on Derech Hasod, Piresh on Derech Hasod. Legamre Acher. It's a new world.
Right. The problem
so
with that.
I'm trying to suggest here something.
But here's the problem. You could explain the Gemara however you wish, but the Shulchan Aruch doesn't treat it that way. So we still have to deal with it. Right? In the Shulchan Aruch, you can't explain al derech hasod, even if the Mechaber was a Kabbalist, but he left most of it out of the Shulchan Aruch. Now, we poskim treat this as halacha lamasa. So even if you want to explain the Gemara differently, it's not going to solve our problem. And here, Rabbeinu Baruch is taking this literally as the same thing. Right, even this very much halacha. Okay, all right. So he says that this is dependent upon the machlokas Rav and Shmuel. The pligi itata gavar ila gavar v'kaimelan kamanda amar like Shmuel tata gavar. Mihu. So that should be the end. That irimi kli rishon is not kli rishon. However, mihu gam ila mevashel umavliya kedei klipa. The Amidiyakir Le Bala. So here he's quoting from the Gemara there. The Gemara says the following. The Pshat and the Braisa, it's really a Tosefta that they're quoting, is that Tata Gavar. It sounds from the Tosefta that when the thing on the bottom is cold and the thing on the top is hot, you're just Mediyach. You have to wash the bottom thing off. So if your hot milk fell onto your cold meat, just wash the meat off and you're fine. Except that the Gemara thinks that's outrageous. Again, maybe based upon their sense of the perception of reality, that even if what dictates fundamentally what the final temperature is going to be is the bottom, still there is some flavor exchange. So the Gemara says that that if they're both cold, then you rinse it off. But if the top one is hot, then kolef. You have to peel off a tiny layer, scrape away a tiny layer, because the Gemara says, ademiyakir lay, while the bottom one is taking the time, while in the process of cooling the upper one down, during that time, there is some flavor exchange, which is actually not, that sounds perfectly reasonable. And so therefore, the Gemara's conclusion there is that if the bottom one was cold and the top one is hot, even though tata agavar, nonetheless, it's oser kedei klipa. It absorbs kedei klipa. So he says, that's what here, mevashel umavdeya kedei klipa adem yaker lebala. Even though, when you're pouring the hot stuff on top, the cold stuff on the bottom will dictate the temperature and the fundamental flavor exchange, but while it's cooling the top one down, it will It will cook and absorb into a single layer of klipa. Kedamridam beperaketz atzolon, the way the Gemara says there. Hilkach, and the classic Jewish tradition, irui eino lo kikli rishon, velo kikli sheni legamre. It's like neither one, it's in between. Ela mevashel umavliyahu kidei klipa velo yoser. Yes, Marshall.
Whether their science is precise enough or not, the whole basis of all the conversations in the Gemara are a pretty sophisticated understanding of the absorptive properties of different types of building materials.
Mm-hmm.
Right? From cheres on the one side to glass at the other, and then all our cases in the middle. Something like this, which just assumes that all foods absorb the same way, it's sort of paradigmatically unsophisticated, right? Like there's just a klipa. Whereas, just like building materials, some foods presumably, if something hot splashed, it's just about cellular density. So, why do they categorically accept putting all food as a single category in a Tosfot like this? Whereas we go for hundreds of pages about glass versus wood versus metal versus stone versus pitch versus whatever. It just seems that something is greatly missing.
So, I know it's a good question. For starters, I would say that as many kalim as you just listed, there's actually a finite number of kalim. It's a small class of kalim. It's probably, 5 to 10 different kinds. I mean, when you look at Meseches Kalim, for example, basically you have cheres, wood, metal, and then you have glass, and really those are the major categories. You have a few other, like the...
But to be fair, not to interrupt you, but of course you don't actually agree with that, because as we discussed 2 years ago... You actually believe that stainless steel should have a totally different halacha.
Well, that's a new material.
But
right?
We're constantly developing new materials.
Agreed, correct. So that's fine. But you're asking why they bother to deal with those issues, and with food they treat it as one category, is because the number of foods, even for them, was virtually unlimited. There may be a second consideration. No one's ever asked this question before, and I think it's a good question. The second consideration, with food there is an easier way of actually resolving the matter, which is not really discussed. We haven't discussed it at all here, but it's sort of literally the first thing that the Torah quotes in Yeridei and Hilchos Taruvos, which is Amar Rabbanan Betayma, Amar Rabbanan Mekfela, Amar Rabbanan Beshishim. There are three ways of dealing with mixtures of Isser and Heter. One is by tasting it, one is by giving it to a goy to taste, and one is by using Shishim. And the Gemara says that when you have Mimbishein Omino, two things of different flavors of Heter, like Truma and Chulin, you give it to a Kohen to taste. And if it's Tarfus and something kosher, you give it to a guy to taste. And if it's mimbimino, there's nobody to taste it, and it's two things that nobody can taste because they taste the same, or there's no kfela, so then you rely upon shishim. So the foods could easily be tested with shishim, because the accident has happened already, and now you have to decide, can I eat it or not? With kalim, there may be a greater interest in knowing, you could test with the kalim, right? You could cook food in the kli now, and see, now give it to a guy to taste. But that's kind of, that's very risky. You'd rather have rules in advance, knowing what you can and can't do. Your question's better than my answer. And it's not, by the way, that there are sources. I will say that when it comes to our Psak Halacha, we tend to ignore differences in foods for the most part. But you can point to different passages in the Gemara where there are distinctions in foods. There are a couple things in the Mishnayos as well. We have, for starters, Davar Charif. That we have. We do have, yes, one example about by cooking, the opening sugya and Gidon Asha that deals with Isser V'Heter, about Davar Shamein. Davar Shamein, when you roast it, as opposed to normal roasting, which only transfers either a klipa. If you have two pieces of meat in the oven, so if you have a treif and a kosher meat, and they're not touching, so at least a good number be shown in Paskin at B'di'eved, it's not a problem. Rechalav Milsahi. But if they're touching, so maimim ikara, then you only need a klipa, wumachmir, a little to peel off where they touched, wumachmir to require kidei netila, a little bit. Machlokas harishonim. But if one of them is fat, very fatty, very juicy, so then we assume that the iser flavor is mefapea, it diffuses throughout. So you do have some categories. They tend to be characteristics of foods more than specific foods.
But none of this would apply to cheres. and cheres is bole, and you can't kosher it.
Correct.
So I guess I don't understand your question. In other words, is it relevant to certain materials from the outset?
I think his question is that, is that why, when we talk about ilah gavar and tata gavar, in terms of food, it applies to kam as well. There's no attention being paid to which kinds of foods are we talking about.
Which kind of foods? I thought you were thinking which kind of
material. No. Which kind of foods? Right. For Chazal, food is one category. It's called food. Okay, so we have davar shemen, we have davar charf. Right. So, by the way, I will point out that we did see, and now that you gave the example in the Mishnah earlier in this parak, when they talk about it was bitzonin. It wasn't hot, but it was chomet yayin shenafal al anavim. So the Gemara talks about the difference between whether the grapes are whole and still attached to the thing, where even the hole is plugged up, versus if they are mevukaos, if they already have splitting, right, or pulled off the thing. So there is some recognition, but it's not as clearly delineated and defined in many of the Gemaras as we would always instinctively turn to Kalim.
That lack of distinction is a chumrah?
Probably yes. I mean, in other words, we assume that food absorbs. So then if you were to demonstrate to me the food, that wouldn't absorb, I would say it probably comes out to be a chumrah much, rather than a kula. But there are, right, gemaras that talk about when it has protective around, right? We didn't talk about it. That same gemara I referred to about the fatty foods that diffuse more than something that's not fatty. So there, the gemara there talks about it and appears elsewhere in Chulin about membranes that block, membranes within different parts of the animal that will block things even when you've salted them or maybe even roasted them from the flavor transferring through. So there is a recognition that it's not everything is always the same. When you get to Shulchan Aruch, it tends to be less of that distinction. That distinction almost collapsed, where the kalim still are very much distinct as they're discussed in your idea. Okay. So v'imkain, if that's true, that a kli rishon, a irimi kli rishon, cooks and absorbs just into an outer layer, v'imkain kelim shenesu ayide kli rishon, shem bolim me aver le'aver, if a kli absorbs on the fire, in a kli, what we call a kli rishon, and we assume that the entire pot has, in other words, the absorptions diffuse throughout the entire pot, not just in the outer layer. Lo sagi b'iri. It's not sufficient to use iri to kasher. It's shrei ha'iri eino maflit ela kedei klipa. Iri, only if you have a kli that only absorbed into the outer layer, right? It wasn't liquid, it was dry, whatever your case you come up with that you assume was only bolei kedei klipa. Or, for example, the only way the kli was used was by pouring, was through iri mi kli rishon. So under those, so because a regular kli rishon absorbs throughout the entire pot, but irimi kli rishon only gets out the outer layer, therefore vahani kara. Let me just read this sentence again. And lo sagi be iri sherei irin maflek klipa v'yoser vahani kara shem bolosai de iroi hayirin nira kimokain the sagali be iroi lahagilan. Those things that only absorb through iroi, the only kli that I can think of that absorbs, well, they're probably different kalim absorb through iroi, but you think about a soup bowl, right? Something typically is through iroi, assuming that the ladle is a kli rishon. So you take from, even though you may think a ladle is a kli sheni, we usually assume it's kli rishon, you scoop out with the ladle, you pour it into the soup bowl, that's iroi mi kli rishon. Or, the only case, sinks are a really interesting case. I know it's, as the community has become wealthier, people tend to have two sinks. It's certainly a great convenience if you want to leave dirty dishes in the sink. I grew up, my mother had two sink racks, even if she used, even if at times that she had one sink. The truth is, al pidin, you don't need two sinks, you don't even need two sink racks. It's very actually hard to get situations of a...
It wasn't
loud enough.
Point that out.
Yes, thank you. So I was discussing this actually last week. A shayla came up from someone, and the truth is the only way a sink is normally ever going to absorb from the stuff in it is if you poured hot soup into the sink. because even if, you know, what is the status of the water that comes out of the tap? That's irimi kli rishon. Let's assume it's connected to the boiler. Except for that, there's no problem if the water that comes out of the tap gets absorbed into the sink. So that water is nothing. It's power. It's whatever. It's neutral. And even if that water lands on a piece of food, a piece of meat, a piece of milk, so that's nice. The water can now temporarily get flavored by the milk, and the milk can get flavored, or the meat by the water, but then it falls into the sink, and at that point, it's not irimi kli rishon. It could be irimi kli sheni, and that we're not going to be concerned about being absorbed into the sink.
So what do you need to rack it off?
So your dishes don't bang against the bottom, I guess. I don't. The truth is, I'm not even sure why it necessarily helps. And if for those who think you would, if the sink gets plugged up and the water rises, you should have a similar problem. So it doesn't really, you know, I'll pee then. You don't need it. Because again, you have to think about how irimi kli rishon is functioning. It functions to the thing it comes in contact with, there can be a flavor exchange, but after that, it's now klisheni, so it's really not an issue. Okay, so anyway, you'd have to work really hard, and I'm not even sure it's possible to come up with a scenario. But the only situation you could have is if you pour hot soup, let's say hot chicken soup, into the sink, you pour it out, so then the sink will absorb kidei klipa. But even then, so what happens when you pour hot water from the tap on that? So true, the hot water could extract a little bit of the soup, right, that's in the klipa, but now the hot water is a klisheni. What's it going to do to anything else? So it's really hard to construct why in a sink you should actually have any problems. But okay, but that's what irimi kli rishon. That's apparently it's maflit and mavliya kidei klipa, and therefore if you have a kli that was used exclusively with irimi kli rishon, so Tosa says it would appear you should also be able to use irimi kli rishon to kasher it. And he says, "V'chem peirashti b'seder biur chametz b'krovet Shabbos agadol sheyit seid Rav Yosef tov elem pachar kederes ein tzarach lafalcha ukaros mutaras kishakel medura anayla anocha." So I didn't take the time to go research this. I can explain a little the background, but I didn't get the full text. But basically, what Tosa says is, they don't do yotzos here, right?
No.
Even the Shas got the right. I've been here Shas, so they're the Yotzos. I think the Yekes are about only the last. What's that?
At Arachaim they do it.
Do they do all the Arba Poshis or just Shabbos HaGadol?
Is that
are they Yekish Arachaim?
Yeah.
Breuers does. Breuers does.
They are Breuers.
Okay, so that's why, because in Breuers they do it just like they did in Frankfurt, exactly the way they did it. So the Yotzos were once done. It wasn't just a Yekka Minag, it was an Eastern Europe also, but it stopped being done at a certain point, in Minag America probably. So what the Yotzos were, if you look for Shabbos HaGadol, part of the Yotzos is a Chazara on Hilchos Pesach. So here it sounds like Tosus had a commentary on Rav Yosef Tos Elam's Yotzer for Shabbos HaGadol. Only quote something. I can tell you the word. I can tell you what individual words mean, but I don't know. I don't have the full text. But basically, a pacha refers to a cheres. But he basically says he explained that according to Rav Yosef Tos Elam, you don't require irimi kli rishon is sufficient on something that only absorbed by irimi kli rishon. But then he says, he says you can't be lenient that way. You have to do hagalan a kli rishon mishum de pa'amim shetochav ha'ka'aros betoch kli rishon betoch yora murutachas. He says sometimes you actually do stick them in and they absorb al yedei kli rishon, and therefore they require hagala in a kli rishon. Now I looked in Shulchan Aruch. I have to look again because someone actually asked me the shayla that I mentioned last week. In Shulchan Aruch, well, they don't paskin this way. In Shulchan Aruch, if you have a kli that's only used irimi kli rishon, you know that you can kasher through irimi kli rishon. Now it could be that Tosus would agree with that. Tosus is concerned about a particular kind of kli, which often is sometimes used also. Sometimes they stick it into a kli rishon. It's not only through irimi kli rishon. This in itself runs into a different machlokas, a very odd machlokas, which we'll encounter in the next sugya, and it's a machlokas, I think, Mechaber and Ramah. I think the Mechaber is Mekel. How do you determine how to kasher a kli if it's used primarily for one purpose, but might occasionally have been used in a different way? In other words, if you have something which is normally used with a liquid medium to absorb, but once in a blue moon, it might be used directly on the fire. So if it's normally used directly on the fire, you require libun. If it absorbs through a liquid medium, you only require hagala and hot water. So what happens, what do you do with something that's used both ways, but it's used primarily one way? So the Mechaber, I think, paskins, you go follow Rov Tashmisho. If the norm is one way, and just occasionally it's used the other way, so then you don't need to do the other thing. It requires a little explanation why. Maybe we'll talk about it in the next sugya. And the Ramah, I think, is machmir, that whenever it's a possibility it's used the other way, you have to be machmir to do it that way. That's certainly the way sounds what Tosis is assuming here. Tosis doesn't say that the normal usage of the kli is also in a kli rishon. He says that mishum dipa'amim shetoch makaris betoch hakli rishon betoch yaramu tachas. He says, sometimes it happened to do it that way. And Tosfos says, therefore, you should do, you have to do Hagalah Kli Rishon. But it really sounds in Hilchos Pesach that if you have a Kli that's only used either Irimi Kli Rishon, and you know it's only used either Kli Rishon all the time, and it's never been used in a Kli Rishon itself, then it's sufficient to do Irimi Kli Rishon on that Tekasher.
Like a supo.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you had a supo that you, the kind that would you be able to kasher. I mean, the problem is that the china we don't kasher, and glass, I guess, for Pesach we wouldn't kasher that either, but in year round we, some of us would say you don't need to kasher it. But let's say you had a wooden bowl or something like that. A wooden bowl, then you would kasher it only. You could kasher it either. Marshall.
How can
the
Chaver write, why is it relevant how it's used a lot of the time? If the sort of animating approach behind it, that someone who's directly on the fire, I can't talk about it right now, opens the pores more and trafe or whatever gets in more deeply, and so you can only reverse it, which is the whole theory of kashering, so, at the same level, what does it matter that 6 times out of 10 you only went 4 layers deep? But twice you went.
So my assumption is, but we'll have to explore this if we touch upon it in the next sugya, is that the Mechaber's understanding, it's based upon, there's a passage in the Gemara that is a question of what the Gemara means. My guess is that the assumption is that the kelim are not b'nei yoman by the time you get around to kashering them or using them, and therefore it's only examined the Rabbanah that you need to kasher it, and therefore they said that when it comes to kelim that are used, let's say primarily one way, but you might have occasionally used it the other way, they didn't mandate you to do the more severe form of kashering.
That would be the great case. Then there's no argument. If 7 hours ago you used it on Aish, how could you possibly?
So let's wait till we get there. Let's wait till the next. So yeah, and we'll talk a little more about it then. Okay.
Maybe
so,
they had a different kind of kelim. Okay, and klicheres today we don't use. Okay, maybe what they're saying is true for klicheres, but not for something that's made from aluminium. They didn't have anything from aluminium or porcelain or plastic, right? Huh? So maybe this is true. This is applied to different type of kelim.
So that's true in general. That the kelim they had, for reasons that we actually know, were more porous. There's no question about that. But Marshall's question still remains, which is, if you say that this particular kli requires libun because it is used with the fire, and it's insufficient if you do Hagala on it, which is the way we usually paskin, what difference does it make whether or not the kli was always used one way? I have a kli that I don't use on the fire. I use it with liquid. So it doesn't require a libun. It only requires hagala. So if I occasionally used it for libun, but normally for hagala, so if it absorbs, if the whole purpose of requiring libun is because hagala can't get everything out, then once I have a kli that was once used with libun, then hagala shouldn't suffice for that kli. Now, that doesn't depend upon the fact that their materials were different than our materials. Right? You know, if our materials are so different, maybe we wouldn't require libun or hagala in the first place.
But if you use it once a year, okay, for something that needs a libun,
right,
and there is not, okay, probably, I'm just saying, the line of thinking, okay, through the year, okay, whatever that was left there got out.
Okay.
So
that's another question, which is, if you did Hagala on a kli that required libun, what is left in the kli? That's another question. But in other words, Marshall's question is the intuitive question, which is, if you need libun, it doesn't matter you do it once or you do it a million times. I don't doubt, by the way, that the more you use a kli, the more it's going to absorb. But still, we don't sort of draw those lines. We say, once it requires libun, so... So it's not clear at all. Okay, but we'll try to come back to that. But right now, my only... You're correct. According to my theory, if it were a kli, which was ben yomo, then you shouldn't be able to do that. But it also happens to be, although this is really the Ramah, the minhag is we don't kasher kelim when they're ben yomon. So you wouldn't run into it, but, okay. Fine. So now Tosus concludes and says, Imkain, so Vahashta, the last word in the medium with lines. Vahashta, the pirashti iroi eno lomavliya velomaflit rakide klipa, imkain, hani chavio shal oveto chavim, sagi luhu be iroi dumya de gas, the amarhacha, nava artachu. So Tosus says, if I'm dealing with barrels of non-Jews where they stored wine in them, that should be no different than the gas. And Iroi Mikli Rishon should work on that, right? And this is not something that's ever used hot, so you're not going to have Tosus as Gzera. Maybe sometimes we used it in a Kli Rishon. They're never putting the Chavis in a Kli Rishon, and therefore it's sufficient to do Hagalah. And then he goes further and says, V'im Hayam Nasran Hanagar, V'kofam B'malaket Uverehitni, U'meser HaKlipa Shotzar Hayayin, Sagi B'hachi. Below Iroi, if you get a craftsman to sort of scrape out the barrel, scrape a layer off the entire barrel, the part that comes in contact with the wine, that would be sufficient as well. Because really, what if it's only absorbed kidei klipa, that if you can somehow remove the klipa, which usually not very convenient or cheap or simple to do, but if you can, then that would be equal, that would be the equivalent of doing iroi. So sagi bahani below iri the ha'aki navid lo iri enem aflet iri beilim kide klipa. Because when you do iri, all it does is get out of klipa. So it should be no difference if you physically remove the klipa as opposed to extracting whatever yayin was absorbed in the klipa. Okay, so that's this one line, maybe the most important thing halach lemaisa buried in all these kelim that deal with the ainesa, because we don't have these other kelim, but we definitely deal with situations of iri mikli bishan. And the proof being, I had the shayla last week.
Why does it have to be boiling?
In what?
Case, according to that, the final.
If it's not Yad Soledas, so then it's not Irimi Klibishon anymore. So, what's that?
It wasn't cooked in here.
In the assumption, Rava said that in order to get out Kidei Klipa of something that was absorbed, in order to get out Kidei Klipa, you need something that's Mavli and Maflit Kidei Klipa. Now, there are two steps. One assumption is that when it's cold, the Yayin is only absorbed in Kidei Klipa. And now, we have this tool called Irimi Kli Rishon, which has the power both to cause an absorption and extract an absorption, Kidei Klipa. So you have to use, the alternative, by the way, the alternative way of getting the Klipa out is what we do, the Milav Iri Gimel Yabim. There are two ways of doing it, just one is much faster than the other. But they both aim to do the same thing.
Would not have to be with boiling water.
No, if that cold water. Now, as you're doing it for 72 hours, here it's a little instantaneous.
That makes sense, because, I mean, otherwise you would say that if the wine is cold, that it doesn't, then why does it absorb?
Right, but so the assumption is that kavush is kamavushal. In other words, we start with kavush kamavushal.
Why is it kavush?
So, the truth is.
You shouldn't say pickled, because
so what does it mean?
Kavush just means sitting for a length of time.
In a liquid, right. So, Marshall, the reason why we say pickled is because, well, the word means that originally, and many we've shown them, it sounds like kavush. Don't assume that kavush necessarily applies with water or all liquids. Right?
We had this exact conversation last week, and you said the opposite. I know we
paskin that any liquid, it's true. What I'm saying is it's not crazy to start with the translation of kavush as being pickled, because in the context that it appears in the Mishnah, and in some of the in many of the Rishonim, when it starts out, they talk about only vinegar and salt water. Correct. But Lemaisa were machmir, right? They start, the first one they start with is milk, which is certainly not sharp, it's certainly more than water, because the Gemara in Giran Osheh, discussing about what is the chiddush of basar b'chalav, whatever it's relevant for, some discussion of Rav and Abaye, and what's the chiddush of basar b'chalav, and the Gemara says that the taru lei kule yoma b'chelba is shari, but if you cook it, it's asar. If you soak it, it's sharu. If they soak it an entire day in milk, it's still mutter, whereas if you cook it, it's asar. So what's the chiddush there? So the Rishonim say, because if you were to do this with tarfus as opposed to basar b'chalav, so if you were to soak a kosher food in milk that was, let's say, not kosher, whatever the liquor is not kosher, if for kulayoma, again, I wouldn't have said it's dafka that, but that's where they get 24 hours from, by the way. It's from that usage. So if you soaked it for 24 hours, anything else would be aser, but basa b'chol is a chiddush that midaraisa, in order for it to become aser, it's not enough that the meat tastes with the milk, it has to be cooked into it. If it got into it by some other means, by cold soaking, that doesn't make it basa b'chol midaraisa. So it's based upon that, and chalav is certainly not as strong, it's true, it's not as strong as salt water or vinegar, but it starts out there, and it kind of gets extended. But if you read the Rush, for example, it sounds from the Rush that he holds it's limited to chometz and mei melach or something like that. So we don't postulate. I'm not suggesting it only applies to those things, but that's where it starts with this kavush. It really does start in a pickling context. Okay, fine. So now the Gemara says Rava, going back to the Gemara, seven lines from the bottom near the end of the line, Rava ki hava mishadeh gufei laharpanya, when Rava would send empty clay cheres to a particular town, he would send it, you know, through with a non-Jew. So he was concerned. Well, the concern apparently was that the non-Jew might use it in the interim to store some wine in, and then empty it out and then deliver it where he's supposed to deliver it. Apparently, he would turn it upside down, and then he would. I don't know if he would like seal it to the bottom of the thing, and then he'd put some other seal on top of it. And Kasavar called Davar Shemach, he putting a double seal basically. Kasavar, he held that called Davar Shemach Nisa Lakiyam Afilu Lefisha Gazri Rabbanan. Now, this barrel was not in the hands of the guy that long. It's not even clear it was there 24 hours. But because this is the kind of thing that people do put in wine long term, the Chachamim goes there whenever a guy puts his yayin in it, even if it was a very short term placement. Even if it doesn't really reach that threshold, it's part of the Gzeira. And therefore, Rava wanted to make sure that the guy would not use it to store his wine on a temporary basis, in which case we would necessitate doing some type of kashering process, either the soaking with cold water or the irimi klibisha. Okay, now we're done with this part. Now we come back to the line in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that certain things, such as a gas shel even, shezefasa, you have a stone vat which they put a layer of pitch on, and if you don't want it to scrape off the pitch, but the way you clean it is with nigov. What is nigov? Rashi mentioned in the Mishnah already, Afer and Mayim. You would use ashes and you would use water. So the Gemara says the following. Bamem in Agvan, how do you do Nigov? Rav Amar B'mayim, Rav Barchana Amar B'Afer. Rav said you use water and Rav Barchana said you use ashes. So the Gemara asks, Rav Amar B'mayim, B'mayim Bal B'Afer? Would that really be sufficient? We have a different term if you only use water. It's called Hadacha. So Nigov is presumably more than Hadacha. So the Gemara says, and Rabbah, Barachana Amar be'efer be'efer lo b'mayim. Now, efer you could have seen working a little more, but the Gemara thinks either one you couldn't would be insufficient. Ella Rab Amar b'mayim v'hu adin le'efer. Rab Barachana Amar be'efer v'hu adin le'mayim. Okay, so then the question, of course, is, well, why did they each only say one? So the Gemara assumes. The Gemara says v'lo pli habaritivasa habiyabeshta. So the Gemara says they were talking about. Of course, they agree. You both need afer. You need afer and mayim, but they were discussing what's the first thing that you do. What's the first step of the process of nigov? And the Gemara says that one of them was talking about a case where the vat still was moist from the yayin, and one where it was already dry. And Rashi explains that if Rav Amar, Birit Tivasa, the second line, sheyesh ba lechluchas yayin. No saint afer tchila l'shafshef achete no neguva the achar hamayim. Basically, it sounds like you're using the ashes to almost help dry out the wine and absorb the wine, and then you put on water after that. And then, and biyabeshta, which was the other opinion, is mayim. In the other case, mayim tchila the achar evim shafshef. If it's dry already, the gas, you have to put water in it first. My assumption is, I guess, to help get the afer. To rub it into the surface. I'm not an expert on this particular thing. What's that?
You want to sort of get into a liquid wine, liquid to extract the liquid.
From inside, right. It, doing it dry is not going to do such a good job. It's abrasive, but it's not going to absorb and pull out. Yeah.
Is there any nafkamina to this?
Well, the nafkamina...
To this machlokes?
There's no machlokes. There's no machlokas. They're dealing with two different cases.
Oh, so
they're just giving you cleaning instructions. And they were talking about two different cases.
Okay.
right? In the event that the wound is still bleeding, in the event that the wound has stopped bleeding, whatever it is.
Then you use the egg, or it should be moist.
Right. Now, to confuse us more, the Gemara quotes the following traditions. Itmar be Rav mishmei the Rav. In the Beis Medrash, in the name of Rav, they said, Tarte Tlos. And in the name of Shmuel, they said, Tlos Arba. Three or four. And Besurim, that's Besurim Asnu Hachi. In Surah, that's how they taught the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Rav says two and three, Shmuel says three and four. I'll explain in a moment. Hold on. And then, however, Bepumpadisa Masnu, in Pumpadisa, so they taught the Machlokas Masnu Be Rav. Masnu they taught Be Rav Amri Mishmei the Rav, Tlos Arba, and Shmuel Amar Dalad Vehe. In other words, in Pumpadisa, rather than 2, 3, 3, 4, they taught 3, 4, 4, 5. And then the Gemara says, "Velo pligi, mar kachashav mari basrai, umar lo kachashav mari basrai." The question is, do you count the last time that you used the water or not? I call it the final rinse. So Rashi, I'm going to go to explain following Rashi's second interpretation, the one he heard from his father, which he prefers. We could do both, but that will confuse me and maybe confuse you too. And if this were halacha lemaisa, I would be more invested. I don't think this is how we would probably clean a gas today. We would probably take out a high pressure hot water washer or something like that, and use some other kinds of agents, and we'd get it pretty clean. But Marshall, you're going to ask?
Just a super quick question. Obviously, I've learned very few topics in my life as these things go. I don't remember seeing Besura.
This is found in Shas a good number of times. If you take a Bar Ilan, you will see it. It's not, I don't know if we've seen it in Avodah Zarah, but this is not an uncommon thing. And this is the exact way it's presented. They present it first without telling you it's one opinion, and then they'll say, Besura Masnu Hachi, which was the last thing they said, but Bepumpadisa Masnu in the following way. It is, I can't tell you if it's 5 times, 10 times, 15 times, this is not unusual. What's that? 7,000? No, please, don't say that to us. We're almost finishing that. There's a new part of Shas, we're not going to finish in January. I think it was more like, 7.5 times 365, so about, 2,600 blot. Okay, 2,800 blot. All right, anyway, so... Rashi, let's go to Rashi, in the middle of the very long Rashi of Eloplegi. It spans short, medium, and when big wide length, wide lines, and Rashi a couple of lines in v'istem afarshi v'lo pligi. I'll say hani lishani desur de pumpadisa. There's no machlokas between the two different base medrash traditions. Rather, it's just the way they're counting. Ela desura lo chashvi mayi basrai u de pumpadisa chashvi lahu. At the end of the sequence, the last thing you're going to use always is going to be a rinse with water. And the question is, are you bothering to count that last rinse or not? So Surah didn't count the last rinse, so Rav said two or three, Shmuel said three or four. And Pumpadisa, who each number is bumped up by one, was counting the last water. Now you have to explain. So Velo Pligi means the two Lashonos of Surah and Pumpadisa don't argue. See, in Rashi's first Lashon, it turned out that in one of the two versions, not in both, strangely enough, Lo Pligi meant Rav and Shmuel weren't really arguing. They were just presenting, again, something like this, whether you counted the last thing of water. But it was a very difficult reading. That's why Rashi rejected it, because it turned out that in one of the two Beis Medrash's versions, there was no Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, but in the other ones there were. And usually it's parallel. So rather, Lo Pligi means the two Lashonos, Sur and Pumatisa, are not arguing about what Rav and Shmuel's positions were. Rav and Shmuel most certainly argued, but Sur and Pumbedisa weren't arguing what the din was Aliba the Rav and what the din was Aliba the Shmuel, but rather they were just trying to, whether you counted the last water rinse was the reason why they gave a different number. Now how does that work out? So Rashi explains, Avol Rav Shmuel Pligi, they definitely argue, V'hachi Perusho Demilsa. Tarti Tlas means the following. This is Rav within Surah. Tarti Biabeshta, when it's dry to start with, first you have to put in Mayim and then Efer. That's the two things, Mayim ve'efer. Plus, if it is, when you need three, Biriti Vasa, if it's wet, you need Efer u'mayim ve'efer. And Rashi doesn't fully explicate, but this is what I assume he understands. That the purpose of the Efer, according to Rav, when it's wet, is not to do the scouring at first. It's actually to dry out the wine. And then once you've dried out the wine, now you put in water to moisten it and Efer to scour it. So according to Rav, and both Lashonos agree in principle, If it's wet, if it's dry, you put in mayim first and afer, and you only need to put in afer once. And if it's wet, you put in afer to dry it out, then mayim and afer. But the last thing, according to these two lasonos, of two or three, meaning mayim afer, or afer mayim afer, is always the afer. And what Pumbedisa believes is, yes, that's true, but everybody, of course, agrees that you have to do a one water rinse afterwards, and Sura counted it, and Pumbedisa didn't count it. Now, what? That's Rob's position. Now, I just try to get my place for a second. Ushmul Amar, Tlos Beritivasa Kiduka Amris. I agree with you that when it's wet to start with, and Shmuel's position, as we'll see, is that you always require Afer twice. It has cleansing powers both times, so no matter what, you require twice. So when it's dry, when it's moist, so Rav and Shmuel both agree you put in Afer first for different reasons. For Rav, it's just to dry it out. For Shmuel, it may be to dry it out, but it's also the first cleansing. So you have to do Afer, Mayim, and Afer. So Rav and Shmuel would agree on Ritivasa, because even for Shmuel, you've gotten in two Afers there. So hence, 2-3 for Rav, which is Yabeshta and Ritivasa. 3-4 for Shmuel. 3 is like Rav, Ritivasa, we're inverting it. And Dalid is Mayim, Avobi Yabeshta, Dalid. Mayim, the Afer, Mayim, the Afer. Because Shmuel, as Rashi will say in a moment, always requires two times Afer. The Bechulu Be'inan Afer Tri Zimni. So that was the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. So Rav does not, as a matter of principle, always require Afer twice, only if the first Afer was used to dry out the wine. So now, Pumbedisa Mastu Rav Tlos V'Arba, how does that work? B'Yabeshta Tlos, Mayim V'Afer, and Mayim. And he's counting that last Mayim. V'Hainu Nami Kidesura, El Dahani Kachashe Mayim Basrai. Pumbedisa, they were counting the last water. Ur V'Tivasa Dalid. Afer, Mayim V'Afer, that's where they stopped in Surah. And now Pumbedisa added, Umayim, the last one. Ule Shmuel, etc. So Rashi goes on to say that Shmuel, Rav and Shmuel argue by Yabeshta, both according to Surah and according to Pumbedisa. They happen to agree by Ritivasa, but for a different reason. They argue by Yabeshta, because Rav doesn't even require Afer a second time, where Shmuel does. But the Machlok, that's only between Rav and Shmuel. But between Sur and Pumbedisa, there's no machlokas. You simply, whether you count the final rinse, because after you use Afer, the last time, when you put on the Afer a sufficient number of time or times, so then you rinse it off afterwards. So Surah did not bother to count that Mayim, and Pumbedisa does. And that's why it's 2-3-3-4 versus 3-4-4-5. But there's no machlokas between Sur and Pumbedisa. The machlokas is actually between Rav and Shmuel. Okay, so that's the end of the Afer Mayim. That's how you do Nigov. All right, so we're going to stop here. The Gemara is now going to go for the rest of till the next Mishnah, talking about different kinds of kalim in the vat, in the wine press, in the vat, and what they absorb and how you kosher them and so on. It's more very technical in nature again, not so much halacha lamasef. I mean, it is halacha lamasef, except for none of us are engaged in dealing with this, so it doesn't touch our lives as the next sugya very much will. Okay, any questions?